Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. And I want to tell everybody, because of the way the practice sessions are being held with the Dallas Cowboys, we won't have any Saints information from those practices until after 6 o'clock. Kellen Moore, I think it's 6:10, is when he meets with the media. And so after 6, Steve Geller and Charlie will have Deuce on to talk about the practice sessions that were held today with the Dallas Cowboys. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, it'll be the Saints Hour with Mike Hoss, the first edition of the Saints Hour this year. At 4:25 this afternoon, Blake Ruffino, guy's been on our show many times, does a great job for the RU Sirius Sports Network, comes on and talks LSU Tigers. At 5:10, Mo Bud Dean Kleinsmith, the Pro Football Hall of Fame athletic trainer, comes on with us to talk about not necessarily Jordan Tyson, though it's really centered around him, the issues with hamstring problems. And when I talked to him this morning, he was like, hamstring problems, that's been going on since they had leather helmets. So, Charlie, typical Dino, but we'll have him on at 5:10 to talk about the hamstring issues that, man, is really struck with Jordan Tyson. And then at 5:35, Frank Selfo, the head football coach of the Southeastern Lions football team, will join us, and we'll talk about the Lions and, Charlie, a lot of expectations for Southeastern. And, you know, that's a good thing because of, you know, what Frank has been able to do there. And the expectations have been lifted for the Lions each and every year. They're a top 20 team this year again. So we got to talk to Coach Selfo. Glad to have him on. Frank's just a terrific guest. Charlie, one of the things that came out today on NFL stats, and they did this, the average roster age for each NFL team, and they based it off the guys that were in training camp, because you can't do that until really the final cutdown. And remember, for years, the Saints were always kind of at the trail end of that. That's not a lot of difference between the youngest team and the oldest team when you look at it all across the board. It ended up being the Dolphins, the youngest team in the NFL with an average age of 25.2. The Chiefs, and that really surprised me, 25.4 are in the two spot. Titans, 25.6. And then Browns, Packers, Raiders, Vikings, and the Jets, the Saints, and the Panthers are all tied. The average age, 25.8 years. So, you know, a lot of times we get texts about, oh, the Saints are an old team. Used to be. Not necessarily the case anymore. This is a fairly young roster. And when you got your average starting age on your team at 25.8, that's a dramatic change from just a few years back. The team with the oldest roster is actually the Commanders, right? Washington. That didn't surprise me. 26.8 years old, which is basically like a year older than the Saints. But, you know, you see, it goes from 25.2, the youngest, to 26.8. That's not a heck of a lot of difference. But the Commanders do have a roster with a lot of older players on that team. And so, but the Saints used to be at the bottom, where we see now the Commanders, the 49ers, the Giants, the Bengals, even the Broncos and Falcons and Rams. Those are kind of the teams with the oldest roster, but there's so little difference. But shows you how much this last year and a half has changed this football team. They've become much younger all across the board.
Yeah, it's the youth movement, Mike. We talked about it a lot throughout the offseason. As far as the Commanders go, Ian Harditz had put this out there. He does great work for RotoWire. The Commanders have the oldest defense as well, at almost 27 years old. entering the season average age of those defenders. But for the Dolphins, they have the youngest offense at under 25, the fourth youngest defense, so there's no shock that they're number one overall. And to the Chiefs, you were surprised about it, but I mean, Coach Spags, Steve Spagnuolo's got the youngest defense in the entire NFL.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
For me.
Think about
you
that.
You would not have guessed that.
Right.
Really wouldn't.
And the Saints, talking about Kellen Moore's impact and bringing in his guys, the Saints have the fifth youngest offense of any team in football. So and the youth movement on that side of the ball, there's still, I guess there's like a couple of albatross type of players, like Cam Jordan's up there in age. He kind of bumps up, you know, the defensive age a little bit because they are the 21st, you know, age defense. But specifically on offense, that's part of the reason why the Saints have a top 10 youngest team in the NFL entering the season.
Absolutely. And the Falcons, who, man, have had a bunch of injuries on the defensive side of football, signed Za'Darius Smith, 1 year, $6 million contract. He has $2 million also that he can earn in incentives. This is a football team that really has been struggling with injuries and also the suspension to James Pierce for 8 games. And you lose Jalen Walker. And they're all about pressure. One thing with Jeff Ulbrich, he is all about putting pressure on the quarterback. We had spoke about this last week that they have more sacks in the NFL last year than any other team in the NFC. And second overall in the NFL. So they've come up with a deal to sign the old veterans, Za'Darius Smith, and nice deal. Looks like he can make himself at least $6 million and maybe a couple more in incentives. But, man, those are two massive losses. When you think half a season, and Deuce and I were talking about this, how long Pierce would get with that suspension. Would it be a full season? Would it be 10? Would it be 8? Sometimes, I mean, that's all hard for me to guess because who knows what the commissioner and what the crew he has around him, what they do with it. But losing him for half the year and then Jalen Walker for the full season. They need some talented edge rushers. And I think Za'Darius Smith still has some football gas left in the tank.
I will say this, though, Mike. In the Falcons are one of those teams I'm looking at early in the season. Because if you look at those first 8 games where you're without James Pierce or without Jalen Walker, we saw how Falcons fans are reacting to, you know, the quarterback play of Tua during their preseason opener and how it was less than stellar against the Broncos this past weekend. The Falcons are one of those teams, I've brought it up before, Mike, I think they could be sunk in the first half of the season, just looking at their schedule. And then if you get to the back half, yes, you have a lot more NFC South games and everything like that, but just going through it week by week by week, I mean, we could be sitting up here, Mike, in week 9, and I would not be shocked at all to see that be a 2-win team. I'm just being completely honest.
I think they'll win more than 2 games. That Bijan Robinson's going to get them a couple wins.
And Drake London's great, too, but yes, quarterback play is an issue for them. Their biggest strength on defense has been completely wiped out. And just look at the schedule. I mean, they don't have an easy, quote-unquote, easy game, really, Mike, until when they play Cleveland. So it's just a really tough situation for Atlanta. And once again, this is kind of, I guess, my hot take entering the year. I would not be shocked at all if during that first half of their campaign they get sunk by the schedule that they're going to be going up against.
Also yesterday, Texas star left tackle Trevor Goolsbee went down with a left knee injury. There were a lot of people in Austin that thought, you know, he might be lost for the year. It's being diagnosed as a bone bruise. His timetable for a return remains to be seen there. I know they want him back on the field in week 2 because you know who they got to play, and that's Ohio State. But the good news is it was not the devastating knee injury that would knock him out the entire season. Trevor Goolsbee, I think, will end up being a top 10 pick in this draft. He is a really good pass protector. I like to see him become a little bit more physical as a run blocker and finish off his blocks, but he's really one of the star offensive linemen in college football. And again, with the bone bruise, we'll see how long it takes him to come back from that. I knew he'll get great care. Man, you go to Texas, it's Taj Mahal as far as taking care of. They're in Oregon, man. They really do a great, great job rehabbing their players there. But that was a big scare to Texas to have Goolsbee go down. And the way he did, a lot of people covering the team thought it would maybe be in the worst case scenario, but looks as though he'll be back sometime early in the season now. Again, LSU didn't play Texas till late. I'm sure Goosby will be back by then. Also, there's a couple of reports that the Saints have worked out Chase Claypool, former second-round pick wide receiver from Notre Dame. Man, he looks the part. You're talking about a dude that's huge. He's 6 foot four and a half, 230 pounds. He had a from University of Notre Dame, Canadian, came down here, really made a big impact for the Irish, and had a tremendous rookie season for Pittsburgh back in 2020, where he caught 62 passes. Nine of them went for touchdowns. He averaged 14.1 yards a catch. The next year, it sort of dropped off a little bit, 59 catches, 14.6, only two touchdowns. But since then, he's went Pittsburgh, Chicago, Miami in a very short period of time. Something there is sort of missing with Chase Claypool, because he was a guy that you saw him as a rookie. You say, wow, that guy is a big-time player. It just never built on that at all. Looks as though he's worked out for the Saints and a few other teams. But you talk about a 6 foot four and a half, 230-pound receiver. How many of them cats they got walking around this world? Very few. But he's something physically is not quite right with Chase Claypool. Just with those type numbers early and that type size and athletic ability, it just has not been able to click from him. Other than the 2020 season. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Before we go to Blake Ruffino, the boys out in California, let us know that running backs Kendra Miller and Devin Neal are practicing today. We'll get more information about the practice sessions in the 6 o'clock hour with Deuce McAllister, but good news that both Kendra Miller, Devin Neal back on the practice field. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line and bring in the founder, CEO of Are You Serious Sports Network, Blake Ruffino. Blake, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mike. I haven't been trying to avoid you the last 2 weeks. It's just, you know, Charmin football, Lane mixing up my times every now and then on days we can and can't be out there. So I'm glad to be here with you today.
Blake, is that time during fall practice where, man, everybody's tired as hell. And I think one thing with Coach Kiffin, he's sort of testing them now. Okay, you guys think you're tough and you came in here in great shape. We're going to test you just how great a shape you in. And I think it's that time of the year where for some guys it's like, man, I done hit the wall because it's hot, it's humid, and you getting new things thrown at you because it's a new regime. And so how has that affected the practice that you've been able to see? I know you don't get to see the entire practices, but from what you've been able to see, because, man, I know when it gets to that halfway point a little bit more, man, you hear the huffing and puffing.
Yeah, I think for me, whether it's us being there or some of the things coming out of the scrimmage or, Mike, whatever it may be, I do think that this is the toughest point for them. This is the toughest week, Mike, you know, because this is a little bit past the halfway point. I do think that they are looking forward to tomorrow's quote-unquote walkthrough, which, by the way, I'd never heard of the walkthroughs that Lane Kiffin goes through in reference to, you know, Mike, I'm hearing that, you know, last week there was a three-hour walkthrough or two-and-a-half-hour walkthrough, whatever it is, you know, 195 plays running a walkthrough. Regardless of that, It is getting tough. And Mike, here's the good thing about Lane. I think that there are two personas of him, as you and I have been discussing. The off the field that everybody gets enamored with, but then they don't see the on the field and what we see at practice. And I think that if you slip up and you don't give 100% effort, your job will be taken. And Mike, I'm not so convinced right now at receiver. That hasn't happened to some extent. I'm not completely sold in my mind that that has not happened along the interior of the defensive line, good or bad. And so I just think that if you don't go out there, if you're an LSU football player today and you don't go through this toughness, your spot's going to get took. And so I say it like that just to say that I think that a lot of people coming out of this scrimmage learned that. They learned it in practice on Monday. Mike, I fully anticipate when we go out there at 6:30 tonight, they will do it again. And so, like, he is just going to play the dudes that are mentally tough and ready to go. So I don't know if that's the best way to answer your question, but if you're asking me, hey, Blake, 50,000-foot overview, what have you seen? It's more like, Mike, they're going to put in the dudes that are going to help them to win, and they don't care about anything else. They don't care about your mama. They don't care about your daddy. They don't care about how much money you make. If you are not going to give 100% effort, you're not going to play. And, Mike, I think that those two positions I just mentioned are probably the biggest two in there that I've noticed and how they just kind of overall run things.
Deuce was telling me this last week that at Ole Miss, it's like, because, you know, we talked about all the new receivers coming in, and it's like 9 or 10, 11 guys out there playing receiver. And he's like, Mike, I'll be honest with you. At Ole Miss, he normally would play 4 to 5 receivers. And he said 5 being the most. Mm-hmm. He didn't really stretch it beyond 5. So if you looked at it today, who would you think would be those 5 wideouts?
Yeah, this is in no specific order. Eugene Wilson will play if healthy, Mike. Let's knock on wood. Let's go light a candle at our local Catholic church. Jace Brown will be a part of that. Winnie Watkins. I do think that Jackson Harris, Mike, you know, look, he's going to have to get some conditioning under his belt, okay? You can't run this offense if you're not conditioned. And, Mike, I think there's a fight for that fifth. You know, I got to give Phillip Wright a lot of credit here, Mike. I mean, he has done some amazing things. He has done things that I think that have surprised me. And look, not so much in the pass game. I think a big thing for him that has set him apart, you know, talking about the scrimmage, Mike, LSU posted this video, so it's okay to talk about, I guess. The long run from Harlan Berry, it doesn't get sprung without that big block by Phillip Wright. And so I think that just doing the little things right for him very well might get him in that game early in the season and get him some playing time. I do think there's a fight between a lot of guys for, you know, a fifth rotational spot because, Mike, here's another thing, too. I don't know what they're doing at top. Well, let's rephrase that differently. I don't know how they're going to line up Tre'Davious Green in reference to what they want to do. And what do I mean by that? I think, Mike, that there are going to be certain formations and certain situations where in a typical just lineup formation, you would consider him a receiver, you know, or at least on paper to some extent. So I don't know if you throw him in there or how you want to utilize him. How do you utilize Malachi or Zach Grace, which, by the way, Mike, I don't know if Zach Grace is going to play in some of these run formations. I think it just depends. But in reference to receiver, I think those are your 5 right now. I don't know if Trey Brown is, you know, overtaking Phillip Wright. And Mike, to be completely blunt with you, I don't know if Phillip Wright hasn't moved himself into more of that fourth overall role. And a lot of guys are just battling it out. And I think, again, that's that position that, hey, look, man, you had Jace Brown with Winnie Watkins going down who had massive days. Mike, we have a segment on our YouTube channel that talked about the 2 days that he had, so people can go check that out. I just think that those will probably be the 5. I would be lying if I told you, if you asked me right now, Mike, Blake, who are the 5 right now that are 3 right now that start against Clemson, I would say Larry, Curley, and Moe because I have no idea.
One thing I'm willing to bet you a really nice dinner on, you don't see Tre'Davious close to that line of scrimmage. They're going to flank him. His butt out. Man, I ain't getting him close to the line. I'm flanking him out.
Well, Supper Club on you is all I heard. But regardless, you're right. I mean, Mike, you've been in this game a long time. I mean, I don't know how you clarify him. You know, because he's not in a traditional slot in some of these situations. right? Like, I mean, he is and he's not. And so, again, that's why I mentioned Zach Grace. Mike, what's Zach Grace doing with ones? I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I got a public school education, but, you know, I don't think I'm that dumb. So, again, I just look at him and say, Mike, how do you clarify him? I mean, when you have a Trips Wright situation, again, this is their video, so I'll use this. When you have a Trips Wright situation and he's not the slot guy, he's in between two other dudes, what would you clarify him as? So, again, are they using that as a formation to clear him out, to get him through the middle and clear things out? I don't know. Lane's a master and Charlie's a master at that. But, again, Mike, I think they're going to be very unique with him. I think Zach Grace, Malachi Thomas have a very big chance to play a lot here, depending on how they want to utilize Trey Dez. But, again, I don't know. I'd be lying if I told you. But even to some extent on the boundary, you know, Mike, there was a formation during the spring where they went diamond right, Trey Dez left. I mean, it's the same thing that Sloan ran, but what do you do? I mean, there's not a lot of options that you can do with somebody that size.
Yeah, and I think you can use him certainly a lot of different ways. And that one wide out and sort of banking on the other side, you're going to draw coverage. Trey Dez's going to draw coverage no matter what. But if you got him outside, just one cat, man, they're going to have a host of people trying to cover him. I'm not going to say double team all the time, but he's going to be bracketed. They're not going to put one-on-one on him because you're not going to be able to cover him because of his size and his athletic skills. On defensive line, you brought up about the rotation up front and how the young kids now, you know, you're going to have to use them one way or another. I tell you the story. Mm-hmm. Coach O has always mentioned to me, no matter where he's always been a guy that wants to rotate 8 to 9 guys. And the reasoning is those last 5 minutes. He's been a stickler on that. That is where you're going to settle the game. And now today, even more than ever, having those fresh guys out there. And Ross has missed some time with an injury, correct?
Jordan Ross, yes.
And so how that's going to look up front also, and I think they're trying to find what's the best spot to play these young guys, because not all of them are going to be the pass rushers. Not all of them may be great against the run, but there are going to be kind of – times where you're going to have to spot them in there one way or another, and can they hold up? I think that's the learning curve here for these freshman defensive linemen.
Yeah, and look, Mike, from what I've seen, look, we've talked about this interior defensive line probably the most of any position this fall. I just don't know because there are plays that Richard – I mean, look, I don't know how else to say it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I think that there have been plays this fall, there were plays this spring where I think that I'm watching Richard Anderson and I'm like, that's an All-American. There are also situations, Mike, as a young player, that it becomes very boom or bust that he's out of position and long runs start happening. And so it's going to be very apparent for LSU that some of these upperclassmen find a way to hold some things down as these guys learn. Now, I don't know, you know, Mike, they've just rotated so much there. You know, whether it's the freshman and Anderson and Gerald's, whether it's Steph Green or Malik Blockton, and even to some extent, Mike Don McKinley. There's never been a day where I go out there and I'm like, oh, here we go again. You know, like, I mean, there's so much mix up there. So, again, I wish I could tell you that I knew. I just think that they are not playing around in reference to if you have a good day, you'll play. If you don't, you won't. And so that has been my overall theme on them. I do think that Steph Green has been a lot better, Mike, than maybe I anticipated to some extent. But at the same time, there's just been a lot of fighting good, meaning fighting for position there. And Mike, if Richard Anderson can figure some things out quick, I don't know how you don't play him. I'm sorry, but you might just have to live with some of the inexperience because when he creates havoc, I mean, he creates havoc. Again, talking about that LSU video, Mike, he's a half an inch away from a quick slant throw and breaking it down and bopping it down. So, again, those are the situations that you keep seeing with him, and this kid's a flat-out baller, man. So it would not be surprising to me if through the first month of the season that 88's not a starter. I'm dead serious.
One of the things that have come out have been the accuracy skills of Hassan Longstreet, the backup mm-hmm. quarterback. And hopefully Sam Leavitt stays healthy and that sort of thing. But to have a guy who has, I think, for a lot of observers at LSU, coaching-wise, they really didn't know a lot about him. They really rave about how quickly he has picked this up. His accuracy skills, mm-hmm. and I had a conversation with one of the coaches, and he was like, hey, if you think, the guy at Ole Miss, Chambliss, is short, wait till you see Hassan. Okay, mm-hmm. he's not built like him, but it was like, whoa, man, can he throw a football, and it is accurate and right on the money. Has that been what you've been able to see?
A little bit. Again, very boom or bust with him. Mike, he starts off really slow and then picks up. Would I say that he has had the best week as an LSU Tiger this last week? Yes. I still think some decision-making, Mike, needs to be a little bit better. He did throw that interception that was posted. But I think that if you told me that he had the highest up ceiling in that room, I think you would be right. He can do a lot of really good things, and he has the chance to be special. Him and Jack Marucci have worked on that throwing motion. Mike, it's even different from 2 weeks ago, and it has helped him be a lot more accurate, and he's starting to become deadly with it, yes.
When you look at the way they're using Harlan Berry, and Coach Kiffin brought it up during the press conference, running a more mm-hmm. physical style, I do think they're going to move Harlan kind of across the board. I would certainly put him in the slot at times because of the mismatch mm-hmm. you can get with Harlan Berry. But I think he's trying to tell you something here on why maybe Dylan Jones has the upgrade over the two. More physical runner in Dylan Jones. And I think that's come across to Harlan that, hey, even if you get a couple yards, you got to punch it up in there. But his ability mm-hmm. to catch the ball coming out of the backfield – and we didn't see a ton of that last year. I think we're going to see quite a bit of that this year.
Oh, you're going to see it. Mike, here's a hot take for you. I don't know if Harlan Berry, even if he's not a starter, doesn't lead the SEC in receptions. Like, at the running back position. So I don't know that. I think you're right on the money there. I think they're going to utilize him in a lot of different spots and situations. I think they're going to throw him the ball a lot. I think they're going to be very creative with him. You talk about that slot position. So, Lane Kiffin, if you're listening, Mike, the TA said it, not me.
he can call me. I'm good. Hey, I've been married a long time. I've been chewed up before.
Well, he ain't going to do that because, they are posting him. But you're right. But, Mike, he has been a lot more physical. He has kind of picked it up a lot. I do think it's going to be him and Jones, but – Mike, again, I think Lane does salivate at the idea of how they want to utilize him. Again, I talked about this during the spring, Mike, we were at a team period. They threw in the ball five straight times. One was in from him in the slot. So you're not wrong. I mean, if they're entertaining it then, they're not BSing us. So I think that is going to happen. I do think he's gotten a little bit more physical in the run game. The only thing that I would say that I have seen personally with him is, Mike, they're just doing a lot more outside zones than inside, and he's able to pick a spot and hit the hole. Instead of him just trying to pound it in, let him find a crease, let him get north and south, and let him go. But in reference to throwing him the football, they're going to do that a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, if you don't see something a little bit intriguing with him in certain situations.
Okay. Blake, thanks so much for joining us, bud. Always great information. Love when you come on with us, and keep doing what you're doing, brother. Is you clicking it out one day at a
Mike,
time.
Thank you. Hey man, Hydrate Gate is real. I almost fainted the other day. It's 100 degrees out there. My big butt my big butt was sweating. So I'm glad that we're here, though, Mike. It's been good. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Thanks so much. Blake Ruffino does a great job with the Are You Serious Network covering the LSU football Tigers. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. Hey, we all know Saints training camp. Hey, it's in full swing, and it's all given to you by Rouse's Markets. Who Dat Nation, training camp is free of charge, capacity is limited, and all but one practice is completely sold out. So the practice on Wednesday, August 26th at Tulane's Yuman Stadium, hey, you can reserve training camp tickets now by going online at NewOrleansSaints.com. Also, a little nugget here. We talked about it in the first break we did, that the Saints have worked out veteran wide receiver Chase Claypool. They've also worked out veteran Josh Reynolds, another big, tall receiver. So they seemingly have someone in mind that they want to bring into camp and see if he can upgrade that wide receiver position, which we thought was sort of overloaded to begin with. But it looks as though the Jordan Tyson injury has changed their minds on that. So Saints worked out today, Chase Claypool and veteran wide receiver Josh Reynolds. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. I want to thank Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious Network for joining us to talk about the Tigers and their practice sessions. And like I said, this time of the practices in the fall, man, you hit that wall. I don't care how tough you are. You hit it. That heat and humidity gets to you. At 5:10 on Sports Talk, we'll have on with us the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame trainer, Dean Kleinsmith, will come on with us to talk about injuries and specifically the hamstring injury. And at 5:35, the head football coach of the Southeastern Lions, Selfo, will join us to talk about them. Again, rated in the top 20. And every year, I know coaches say it doesn't matter, but I think it makes you feel good. People recognize how good you are. A few nuggets from the boys out in California. Wide receiver Devon Vele and defensive tackle Christian Miller, who we saw, he really played well when he was in the game and then he banged up his shoulder, are out of uniform in Oxnard. So they're not practicing. Also not practicing today, Audric Estime, the running back. So, man, it gives some openings there for some of the younger guys. Hey, with these, guys not in the lineup, gives me my opportunity to see more reps, see more playing time, and it's about opportunity. Now you got to grasp it at this point. You can't let those opportunities slip away. It doesn't matter how you get your chance. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody that the Saints are practicing against the Cowboys as we speak. Practices will end around 6 o'clock. Kellen Moore meets the media at 6:10, and then Deuce McAllister will join us to break down the practice sessions against the Cowboys, and they're practicing now. We had someone, how come y'all not talking about the practices today? Well, they're still practicing. We'll have that on after 6 o'clock, and Deuce will give us the rundown of it. And, man, it's going to be hard to – you can't watch both fields. So I think Nowak is going to watch the offense, and I think Deuce is going to look on the defensive side of things. And 7 o'clock tonight, the first edition of the Saints Hour with Mike Hoss. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, the Pro Football Hall of Fame athletic trainer, Dean Kleinsmith. Dino, how you doing today, bud?
Hey, Mike, thank you. Thanks for pumping me up with that. It's always a pleasure to be on the air with you guys. It's always fun to have some great memories and talk about some of the great Saints times that we all had together.
Dean, we've seen you wrote me back when I asked you to come on about, man, they've been having hamstring injuries since they wore leather helmets, which was a great line. But it is true, and it is a sort of a mysterious injury. I talked to Dr. David Elias about the hamstring injury so many different times, and he was like, you know, it could be a myriad of different things. And, you know, with Jordan Tyson going down for 2 months, and he has a history of it. And, you know, a lot of people, well, Marshawn Lattimore, he changed his diet and his intake, and then he didn't have it anymore. Okay, that might work for one person, but it's not going to work for everybody. And David had always brought this up to me, Dino, and I'll get your thoughts on it. Are we to the point now where you got to find the root issue of this? Is it something with his hip, with his spine, or with his lower back? Because when you have that many, and I know it's a different leg from the one he had before.
Correct.
They're starting to kind of pile up now, Dean.
Well, it's true, and I certainly agree with Dr. Elias. You know that you know they're, but the research has never stopped. I subscribe to a international sports medicine research group, and these are from articles that are on specific injuries worldwide. And in all sports, but I can tell you, if you look at the index every month, when I get the new research, there's always some articles about hamstring strain, and this has been going on since football started. You know, I don't know that we're going to find the root cause, and I don't know that there is a root cause, as you earlier mentioned. There is a multitude of reasons that these injuries occur. I mean, anything from overwork and overuse to a muscle imbalance, maybe over left over right leg, or muscle imbalance, quadricep versus hamstring, the front of the leg versus the back of the leg. If that's out of balance, that could be a problem. But what we've seen mostly in football, I think, and in particularly with the receivers, and Mike, you know, we can go back to 1970 with our number one draft choice wide receiver Kenny Burrow with a hamstring injury. I can further on, and number one draft choice wide receiver 1975, Larry Burton, multitude of hamstring injuries that bothered him most of his career, certainly all of his career with the Saints. And so, you know, you wonder, what is there one particular reason? And the answer to that is no. You know, particularly wide receivers, they're running, they're the sudden, sharp change of direction could be a major cause. You know, that sudden, violent contraction of the muscle when you're changing direction, or decelerating, another big reason for hamstring strains. So, you know, I don't think that the magic bullet is out there that's going to give us the key to stop these injuries. It'd be kind of like, how can you stop concussion? Well, you never will be able to. You know, we're in a violent sport, and all the research that goes on, all the improvements with helmets, yes, that's helping. Improvements with research on hamstrings, yeah, I think that's helping. I don't think it'll ever get us to ground zero.
I can recall growing up, and man, so many track sprinters had it. Okay, especially guys that ran 100, 200 meter dash. And you can understand that, because the torque that they come out of that block, and then trying to build that acceleration up. And for them, it's not cutting or anything, but it's that torque, getting out of the blocks and running as fast as you can. That was associated with that. But now we've seen, and you bring it up, wide receivers. I think probably DBs would be in the two spot. Because now look at them cats. They're running backwards, okay, or sideways.
Exactly.
And so
then,
that.
And then when they plant their foot and explode forward. You know, when a wide receiver's making his cut and the DB has to cover him. Again, these are violent contractions and sudden change of direction. You know, and the explosion that they it takes a toll. It's just, you know, the muscle, the hamstring muscle, all the muscles are Spartans, Mike. I mean, they are Spartans. They will work. They'll do everything you ask them to do as an athlete until you do something crazy, like make that sudden change of direction, sudden deceleration, sudden explosive move. And finally, at some point, they're just going to say, hey, I've had enough. And you get the hamstring injury, which is a disruption of the fibers of the hamstring muscle. And there are three distinct big muscles in the back of the leg, you know, that are located back there. And that's where we see the injury occur. And there's a difference, Mike, on where that injury occurs, whether it's at the top up by the crease of the butt, or is it more at the midline, or is it more behind the knee? Those locations make a difference on how long it takes for a guy to get back. Now, I will not speculate about Tyson at all. I do want to say this. I have the utmost respect for the sports science and sports medicine crew over at the Saints. I've known these guys for years. Sean Gibson, the head athletic trainer, and then Ted Rath, the new director of sports science. I worked with Ted when I was at the Lions for 8 years. Very, very intelligent guy. And they're doing the right things in bringing Tyson along, but, you know, injuries still happen. I don't care how careful you are. It's just, you know, as I said before, a multitude of reasons, and you try to cover them all and be prepared, but sometimes it just doesn't work.
You told us a story back in the fall, which I get asked about all the time, about the Thurman Thomas situation with you and the doc.
You love that story.
That's a great one. But I got asked this today, and I thought it was interesting. Have you and the Saints doctor at that time ever flunked somebody or two thumbs down because of somebody with a chronic hamstring?
Really good question, and you're stressing my memory bank on this one. To answer your question, basically, we do get a history of every player, particularly since the advent of the NFL Combine, and we get a chance to have hands-on and eyeballs on most of the players that you're going to end up drafting. And there are some that we do fail. Let's just say a guy that has had a knee surgery. Let's pick an ACL that he had in college, but the knee is still really loose and flopping around. It's not tight and taut and strong. And so you make a recommendation then to the general manager and the head coach. You say, you know, that this is an unstable knee right now. It's probably not going to get any better. Probably ought to not draft this guy. But to say directly, did we fail anyone because of hamstring issues, a history of them, you know, I can't think of one specific incident that we would have done that. But I'm not saying that it hasn't happened around the NFL. Some teams are very, very cautious about that, about spending one of their precious draft choices on a guy who has a history of being unavailable. And, you know, as Bobby always says, you know, the best of ability is availability. And if you're not available, you're replaceable.
Dean, one of the things is, what is the treatment that somebody like Jordan would go through to try to rehab that pulled hamstring?
Sure. Yeah. And I know I'm fairly certain that that the Saints staff are following all the expected protocols, but there are milestones. There are milestones you do. Let's say he was injured last week, Friday, and you go through the milestone number one, which is pain-free movement. You want to, it's the healing phase. You know, you want him to be walking at a normal, regular pace without a limp. All right. You want to have no pain to touching. For example, no tenderness when the athletic trainer or physical therapist is palpating around that area. No tenderness. So then you move on to milestone number two. After, you know, he passes through milestone one, you go into number two, which is basic muscle strengthening. Low load, maybe on the bike. And he's on the stationary bike, and he's doing pain-free straight leg raising. You want to get through that. Maybe light jogging in place, not running, not jogging, jogging in place. You want to be able to do that comfortably. You want to do that without any creating any pain or any cramping. Then you go on to the next phase, and the next is kind of the return to running phase. It's a third milestone. So then you should start jogging. So with passing a continuous, like a slow pace, straight line, without any aching or pulling sensation. He's coming along. He's getting better. Those muscle fibers are now healing. There's less pain. Then you want to accelerate maybe get him up to 70 to 80% of acceleration. As long as he can do that, running on a field, straight line, now no cutting, still just doing straight line running, without that hamstring feeling like it's tight or grabbing. So now he's getting better. He's getting better, coach. And then you go to milestone number four. That's full speed, return to sport. That's the game ready phase. So, but in order to get there, he's got to exhibit that strict exit criteria before we cut him loose from the training room. When I was at Detroit, I had a head coach, Jim Schwartz, who trusted us as a medical staff. But whenever we would tell him that, look, so-and-so, Johnson is ready to return to practice with his hamstring, Schwartz would say, I'm giving him a few more days. He just wanted to be sure. You have to be patient with these. The recovery takes a long time. And you know, we've called these things mild, moderate, or severe. We grade them grade number one, grade two, or grade three. Where grade one, you know, we call that mild, and he may be out maybe 1 to 3 weeks. If we go to grade two, which is moderate, and again, I don't know the Saints' status with their guys now, but it might be 3 to 8 weeks with a grade two moderate hamstring strain. And then what you don't want to hear is that grade three or the severe, which in some cases turns into surgery and the guy may be done for the year. So, I would expect we're probably looking at a grade, you know, I'm guessing grade two, if they are estimating that he might be out for 8 weeks.
Dean, it's something that's popped up. I mean, when Kellen talked about it after the injury happened at the Jaguars practice, he made sure to emphasize that it was not related to former hamstring issues that Jordan had in college. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, as someone that's dealt with this for years, like, is it a better scenario if it was just a re-injury of that hamstring issue that he had, or is it even worse that it's another hamstring that's separate from the issues that he had in college?
Yeah, that's another very good point, a very good issue. I've had experience of made mistakes and let guys go back too soon. I'll admit that I made the mistake, and they had a re-injury to the same leg, same area, but the re-injury does not take as long to get back to full healing, because there's already basic healing that's been laid down, before the re-entry occurred. I listened to Kellen, talk about this, and he also talked kind of about the, a sudden change in the stride, kind of a folding back. I believe Kellen was saying about this. Again, that comes under the category of a multitude of reasons that these injuries occur.
Oh, man, I can't thank you enough, Dean, for filling this in on that. But I got to tell you this story. We have the news about Jordan Tyson, so I say it, and Bobby reacts as normal. And then Tim Brando was on with us, so we go to break. And he's like, Mike, I ain't never had no damn hamstring pull in my life. I said, could you run like that? Come on, you know better than that. You know I could run like that. Maybe that's why I never had it.
Guess what? Bobby never had a hamstring strain. He never ran fast enough. There was no problem. I mean, I can answer that one straight on. You know, it's like saying, you know, did Danny Abramowitz ever have a hamstring? Hell no. He was too slow.
Dean, thanks so much for joining us, but always great to have you, man. I really appreciate it.
It's so easy, and I'm happy to be with you guys. You take good care, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks,
all righty, thanks so much. Dean Kleinschmidt, Pro Football Hall of Fame trainer for so many years. Just a great guy, and a multitude of thoughts on injury and injury repair. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody, right after 6 o'clock, Deuce McAllister will join us to talk about the practice sessions, which are winding down between the Saints and the Cowboys. And from what I understand, a few fisticuffs going on in practice. So Deuce will bring you up to date on how the offense and defense done, along with Jeff Nowak. And at 7 o'clock, the Saints Hour. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the head football coach of the Southeastern Lions, Frank Sofo. Frank, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man? You've been gone. You only come around during the season, man. I'm a whole lot more fun in the off season. You should call me then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll remember that. Frank, I know for most coaches will say, oh, it doesn't matter where we get ranked, you know, and what people think of us. You got voted second in the Southland Conference in the top 20. But it goes to show, and I'm going to give you the accolades, okay, that what people think of what you've done to that program at Southeastern, to build that program up and to have people not just in Louisiana but outside of the state think that much of the Lions. And a lot of that credit goes to you. I know you don't want to take it, but I'm going to give it to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike, but it really doesn't matter what they vote us. You know, I mean, it's all settled on the field. And I think with the consistency of what we've been able to accomplish here is what's put us in the national spotlight. And I said that when I got here. I just didn't want to be a regional program. I wanted to be a national program, and that, you know, we're at the corner of I-12 and 55, right between New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Mandeville, Covington. We got the Gulf Coast. We're in a fertile recruiting area. I think this is a fantastic place. With the third, might have even passed up with our new president. We might have passed up UL for the second largest university in the state behind LSU. And we just got so much good things, so many good things going for us right now. So I guess it's great to be recognized, but the great thing about our game is that you got to prove it on the field, and that's where it all counts.
What has been the biggest surprise for you in fall drills? Because I think a lot of times you do the spring, and then you're expecting some things to happen in the fall. But has there been one either player or unit that has really surprised you how well they've jumped out?
No, not really, Mike, because with the transitionary phase of what goes on in college football or college athletics across the board, you're not quite sure what your expectations are, a little tampered down because you're not quite sure what you got when you go through spring. And even in the summer, when your freshmen come in, they've never put on pads before, so you're not quite sure how they're going to handle it. So the emergence of a couple of young guys, some older guys who've developed and have another year under their belt, and now they're thrust into a leadership role or a starting position, and their demeanor changes. So it's, I think it's across the board, your team, the personality of your team starts to emerge as fall camp unfolds, and I think that's where we're at right now. We're seeing that thing take place, and we're starting to see the leadership evolve in multiple positions.
Coach, one of the guys, I give Rebo a lot of hell about this, even though he ain't coaching no more, but you got a guy that he was a running back at Nicholas and Jake DelMata, and he has turned into a crackerjack player as a linebacker for you for Southeastern. Talk about a guy with great instincts to the football, smart, makes that big open field tackle. So for people who haven't seen Jake, kind of give that description of him, because he is such a good football player, and he was a good running back. I got to put it to Rebo every once in a while, even though he ain't coaching no more. But, man, DelMata has really turned it up for you guys.
He came in here, and he's a quiet guy, but extremely hardworking, a great leader, very experienced player. You know, we played against him, and so I knew how good the guy was, you know. And when we had the opportunity to land him, we jumped at it. And we're fortunate enough to get him. We're fortunate that he's here. He's going to make a huge impact on our program this year. And he's just – I think his leadership qualities, the way that he plays, the way he prepares, is what you've always dreamed of in a player. But at the same time, that kind of mirrors who he is on the field. The way the ball player that you see on the field room in summer workouts, all of those things. So it hadn't been a surprise for us. I know what it's like going against him, and it's miserable game planning for the guy. And then I'm just glad he's on our side now.
One of the things, Coach, from some of the smaller colleges, will always bring up to me is about, man, depth of offensive, defensive line. There's never enough of them. And when we recruit a guy, he might be a little undersized, and we got to put weight on him. And for some cases, maybe a little weight off of him. But that seemingly is a common theme about linemen. There's just the man upstairs only made so many people that big, that fast, that strong.
Hey, you're right, Mike, but go back to the NFL. That's a premium position up there,
yep,
too, right? They can't find five guys to play to start for them, and they lose one, and then it's a panic mode. And I think that filters all the way through. It's not just small college football. It's Power Four. It's Big Ten. It doesn't matter. It's all the way across the board that linemen are at a premium, and when you have a good offensive line, you have a chance to be successful. Same thing on the defensive line. Those guys, when they're really good, they're drafted first, second, third. They're going to go high in the draft if they're quality players. So that's why everybody wants them, because there's really not a lot of them. And that's across the board, every league, everywhere. So we've been fortunate here. We've had some good ones. We've developed them. They've grown up in our systems. We don't go out and sign a lot of guys, take a lot of transfers at those positions. We take the guys that out of high school, and I think we do a great job developing those guys. And as they grow and develop and become better and better, every now and then we might lose one. But for the most part, our guys stick around here. And that allows us to play with those guys, and we've got depth at those positions.
Coach Selfo, I hear it a lot, too. And going to Louisiana Line Camp at Nicholls, and you got all these, pro coaches there, and they talk about the lack of physicality. It's not like it used to be. So I'll ask you that question. I think because of the RPO game, I do think there's been some changes there maybe it's not the physical game, and I say maybe. I know it's not as physical as it was years ago. These guys are big, stronger, fast. And when you get hit, you sometimes get hurt. But the physicality of the game has changed to a certain degree.
Well, I think that goes along, Mike, with the philosophy of the program. We play some team. We're a physical football program. We're not an RPO, throw a bunch of bubble screens team. We're downhill, a lot of times a two-back team, and we're going to run the football when we have the opportunity to run the football. And sometimes people know we're going to run the football. We're going to run it anyway. And I think that goes when you look back at the teams who are continually winning national championships at our level, at the Power Four level, and at the NFL level. Those guys, the physicality on both sides of the line of scrimmage helped dictate the game, and I don't think that's going to change. It's a grown man's game, and kids struggle playing this game, and the little guys that run around blocks instead of taking on blocks don't last too long in this game because it gets exposed really quick. So I disagree with you. I think it is a physical game for the guys that win. And for the guys that lose, maybe they're doing all that other stuff. They just can't turn the corner. They got great players, but they have a tough time winning those games when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is they're not as physical anymore. You kind of exception to the rule, and I know others too, with it. One of the things you do, and you and I have talked about this in the past, you're not afraid to play multiple quarterbacks. I think for some coaches, they almost freak out. Oh, what? I got to play, I don't have a clear-cut winner guy at quarterback. I got to play multiple quarterbacks, and they sort of freak. But you have always sort of embraced the fact that, hey, I'll win with one quarterback. I'll win with two. I'll win with three if I have to. But not a lot of coaches really do that today.
Well, yeah, I think it goes back, Mike. If you think back at the Tulane days when we had Patrick Ramsey and J.P. Lossman, and, both of those guys, obviously first-round draft picks, both of them, but you can only play one at a time. But we played them both. So we moved those guys in and out of the lineup. We made sure J.P. got reps while Patrick was a starter, and he set a bunch of records while he was there at Tulane. But Patrick got hurt a couple of times, and thank goodness that we had an experienced quarterback. Obviously, he was talented, but he was experienced, too. He had played a bunch of snaps. Then we were able to put him in the game and had success with him. And then when he got to that point, his last couple of years, when he became the starter after Patrick left, Lester Ricard stepped in. And it's the same thing, same process. He got some reps, but then, J.P. was obviously the starter. We did it at Arizona. With Nick Foles and Matt Scott, and Nick went down for about a three-game stretch, and Matt Scott came in, and we won all three games, beating UCLA at home and Washington State on the road. And so injuries happen at the quarterback position. Now, I know Tom Moore's greatest quote, but he had a great one in Peyton Manning, about the way he doesn't practice a certain thing because, if Peyton goes down, that's what it is. And you got to look it up, Mike, if you hadn't heard it. But if you go back and look at when you have a great quarterback, we had Cole Kelly here. Well, he took every snap for us.
Yeah.
We weren't concerned about his injury situation, and that's how good he was. It was clear separation. But when you got a couple of guys that are pretty close where you feel like you can get a guy some experience taking some snaps and playing a little bit, you want to be able to do that just in case something were to take place.
Coach, last question for you. I always ask any coach I get on about is special teams in a return game. It's sort of hidden yardage if the punter or a place kicker. But, man, if you got an ace return man, that's scared of bejesus out of anybody you play. And then it changes the way the punter is punting the ball to him. What you look like in the punt-kick return game?
Yeah, Dekai Joseph will be back this year.
Okay.
He's from the River Parishes. He had a couple of returns for touchdowns last year, had one or two called back. He's a dynamic player, Mike. They kicked away from him the last three or four games of the year. I suspect that's going to happen again this year. But, who knows? I think we're very solid there. Same thing with kickoff return. We've got some guys back there that can really run with the football. And I think that's one of the big strengths of our football team this year is our speed. And so we've got some guys who we can put back there to take care of some things. And we feel very comfortable with that. But you're right, special teams is it's so valuable to us here. We spend a lot of time on special teams, almost parallel to what we spend offensively and defensively, because that's how important. And there's a realization of how games can change, momentum can change, and the scoreboard can actually change so fast through special teams. And we don't miss that point here. It's not understated. I can promise you that.
Yeah, I know you put a lot of emphasis on it. But a lot of people say it but don't do it. You know, because coaches, I got a few of them in my family, and then say they somehow stretch the truth a little bit. We put all that emphasis on special teams. Not quite the case. Coach, we want to wish you the best for this year. We hope to get you back on before the start of the season. But, man, I'm so proud of what you've been able to do at Southeastern, and always great to have you on, and I really appreciate it.
Well, Mike, it's great for me to be on you, man. You're a legend, you know that, and especially in this area. And the only thing that bothers me, you run down to Thibodaux in the summer, and you could come up here to Hammond this fall, maybe catch us next Thursday night. We're the only game in town now.
Hey!
Strawberry Stadium. Yeah, come on up. And then, I know Oakland Heart Jewelers is sponsoring this segment, and I can't wait for my gift to come in the mail from those people, because that's a beautiful place.
Frank, thanks again, Coach. I really appreciate it.
Take care, my buddy. Take care. Talk to you soon.
We'll do it. Frank Soffel, the head football coach of the Southeastern Lions, and he's right. I'm going to have to take that trip up to Hammond, man. Charlie got to let me loose early that day so I can do that next Thursday. So we'll have it done. One way or another, I'll go visit Coach Soffel. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Saints football is back, baby. The black and gold take on the Rams in L.A. Saturday. Remember to turn down your TV. Turn up Saints radio. Pregame 11 o'clock a.m. Kickoff 3 p.m. And then the point after with the Cajun Cannon till 9 p.m. on WWL and the Free Odyssey app. We'll finish it up here on Sports Talk in hour number two right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Keep your dial tuned in to the Big 870 WWL. Steve Geller takes over at 6. You'll have Deuce McAllister on to tell you all about the practice sessions against the Cowboys, which just ended just a few minutes ago. We'll have that right here on the Big 870 WWL. And then the Saints Hour at 7 o'clock.
How's it hanging, everybody, here on the second half of Sports Talk this Tuesday, August 18th. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long bringing it till 7 p.m. That's when Mike Haas and crew will take over in Oxnard, California, where they just wrapped up watching the Saints joint workout with the Dallas Cowboys. And from what I've been seeing on social media, I don't know if there's more highlights to talk about with Deuce at 6:25 about what was happening today or all the little skirmishes that were going on between players. A very feisty workout between these two clubs. Got a little bit of news to get to today. The black and gold were visiting with two wide receivers. You heard Charlie Long in the Sports Flash talking about Chase Claypool, 28 years old, 6'4", 238-pound wide receiver. Physical upside play, burst onto the scene in 2020 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, followed by other stints around the league at Chicago, Miami, Buffalo over the last couple of seasons. He's dealt with toe injuries and some inconsistency. He would bring some vertical height and contested catch size to the perimeter for the black and gold. Kellen Moore is looking for a physical target to step in when Tyson is out, Jordan Tyson, as he deals with a hamstring issue. Claypool could offer some high upside depth if fully healthy. They also visited with 31-year-old Josh Reynolds. He's 6'3", 192 pounds, high floor, dependable 9-year veteran. Has played with the Rams, Lions, Browns, and Jets. Career totals of 244 receptions, 3,200 yards, and 20 touchdowns. Played 5 games with the Jets last year before a hip injury sidelined him. A proven system-wise veteran who understands route trees, blocking on the perimeter, and stepping up in short notice when without needing some hand-holding, a reliable option that'll stabilize this black and gold rotation. Curious to see if they end up actually bringing in a wide receiver. Charlie, it is interesting to note as well that the Saints did lose another wide receiver coming off the field on a cart today. Ronnie Bell sustained an injury. We'll find out more. Obviously, Kellen Moore about to speak to the media shortly here. Looking at some of the other news, looking at the NBA, the New Orleans Pelicans announced two signings. Malik Dia, you heard Charlie in the Sports Flash, a two-way contract, appeared in 35 games for Ole Miss last season, averaging 14.5 points, 5.7 rebounds in 24.3 minutes per game, shooting 452 from the field and 683 from the foul line. Dia scored in double figures 26 times, including 10 games with 20-plus points. A native of Tennessee, appeared in 124 games over his four collegiate seasons at Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, averaging 12 points, 5 rebounds in 20.5 minutes per game. Also, the Pelicans announcing that they've signed Trendon Watford. The 6'8", 245-pounder appeared in 53 games with Philadelphia last season. He averaged 6.5 points, 3 rebounds, and 2.5 assists in 16.3 minutes per game, shooting 5'15 from the field and 7'79 from the foul stripe. Originally signed by Portland as an undrafted free agent in 2021-22 season, the Birmingham, Alabama native has appeared in 270 games across five seasons with Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Portland, holding career averages of 7.6 points, 3.6 rebounds, and 2 assists in 17.3 minutes. So a little Pelicans news there before we delve deeper into the black and gold. But yeah, I was saying to you, Charlie, another injury, it seems, for the Saints at wide receiver. Ronnie Bell, video of him getting carted off the field today.
Yeah, and you kind of fear the worst whenever the car comes out. I'm looking forward to the discussion with Deuce here, Steve, because Deuce has brought this up plenty of times. As far as these joint workouts go, the reps are just too valuable to have all these fights involved, and it sounds like there were plenty of scuffles.
It definitely appeared out of hand today.
But between the Saints and, you know, the Cowboys. So that's really unfortunate because, once again, like Deuce said it himself, like if you are fighting at these joint workouts, you're getting sent to the locker room. It was before the Jaguars, and as far as I know, the Jaguars practice went pretty well without, you know, many scuffles, but apparently that was not the case today with the Cowboys. So unfortunate news about Ronnie Bell. It's interesting to see the Saints kind of dipping their fingers a little bit into the veteran wide receiver market, just, I guess, getting their looks at some guys that they could be interested in.
Yeah,
because that was the thing with drafting three receivers this past, you know, April, is that you feel good about the future of these guys with, you know, Bryce Lance, a fourth-round pick, Berrien Brown, who's been awesome in training camp as a sixth-round pick. But I'm sure that the Saints don't want to necessarily overload their workload, so to speak, right off the bat in their NFL careers as rookies. So this is going to be interesting to see if they bring in either Claypool or Reynolds. They've already brought them in for workouts, if they sign either one of those players to kind of supplement that room post-Tyson injury.
I was kind of curious, you know, looking over the free agent wide receiver list, thinking, what if the black and gold were interested in bringing someone in, and was kind of scratching my head thinking maybe you bring back Brandon Cooks because he's currently out there, a guy that's kind of familiar with this offense.
Yeah, maybe. Keenan Allen was one that I was looking at, but he signed last night with the Colts.
Snagged him. So, it seemed like they heard the Jordan Tyson news and were like, we better scoop him up.
Because he's one of those players, we talk about this every single offseason, that when you're looking at these veteran pieces that are sticking around, they're in their mid-30s, you know, maybe early 30s at the skill position talent, and they're just waiting for training camp injuries to happen to where they get signed and go on for an extra season and tack it onto the list. That's exactly what's going on with multiple different guys. And Keenan Allen goes to Indianapolis. I'm sure maybe the Saints would have had some interest there. Unfortunately, he gets picked up last night. So now they're looking at other pieces on the board, like a Josh Reynolds, like a Chase Claypool, and we'll ultimately see what happens there. But Ronnie Bell getting hurt also kind of stinks.
Yeah.
His name hasn't popped up too much in our discussions about that wide receiver group with plenty of depth in that room. But he's still, you know, a guy that's fighting for a roster spot. So seeing him get hurt at this Cowboys practice, you just hope it's not too serious.
You mentioned Bryce Lance and Berrien Brown. Obviously also in the mix, Trey Palmer, Bub Means, Kevin Austin Jr., Jalen Moreno-Cropper, Brock Recksteiner, who reportedly suplexed a Dallas Cowboys player today. Not surprising considering his wrestling background.
His wrestling background. Recksteiner is one of those as well that we haven't really brought up too much because of the suspension that he's got impending.
Right.
For PEDs. So one of those moments. You just don't like to see these. They happen all across the league, by the way. This isn't exclusive to the Saints and Cowboys. Every time you'll see, you know, these joint workouts, a lot of the times you do see fights end up breaking out and tempers flare, and then all of a sudden, you know, what should be really good reps for these players ends up turning into something it shouldn't be.
What's funny is we didn't see this at all happen last week when the Jaguars in town. I think it was too hot here in Louisiana for guys to be fighting. They're just trying to get into work and get off the field as soon as possible. Too much cool temperatures in Cali.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the milder temperature ended up leading to some more hot heads.
So. Right, there you go, exactly. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. You can chime in 504-260-1870 on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Going to 7 p.m., then make sure you tune in for the first Saints Hour of the season with the voice of the Saints, Mike Hawes. He'll have along with him Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, as well as color analyst Deuce McAllister, as they continue to break down the Saints Cowboy practice today, bringing us the latest from head coach Kellen Moore and any key players that speak at the podium as well. We're going to take that break, come back with Deuce right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Back here on Sports Talk, Saints football is back, baby. The black and gold take on the Rams in L.A. Saturday. Our pregame coverage starts 11 o'clock, kickoff 3 p.m., and then the point after till 9 p.m., all on WWL and the free Odyssey app. Right now, we're going to head out to Oxnard, California, where Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister standing by after watching a pretty feisty training camp session. Deuce, how you doing out there, man?
Man, I'm good. Me and Travis, we here talking, and so I got a question for you. Y'all got the wrestling, the old boxing, how you start the fight? Y'all got that bell?
Oh, I'm sure we could find it, but not on cue right now. But I'll give you the ding, 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 ding.
For the rest of the day, that's all I want to hear. But no, I think overall, you know, it wasn't. It was a good practice. You know, if you're disappointed in anything, it's just the amount of pushing, shoving, punching, fighting, et cetera. You know, I'm sure our guys got some stuff in there as well, but that's not how we've practiced prior. And particularly when you just practice against another squad and you didn't have any of that. And, you know, that would be the only negative. But I did think it was some good work, you know, for us and to be able to come out here and get some stuff done. But, you know, you never want to have it where it's every other snap. That's what you're having to deal with, because you're not able to get good work in if that's the case.
Deuce, I did see some reports that running back Alvin Kamara is dealing with a knee issue, corner Quincy Riley a groin, and that apparently wide receiver Ronnie Bell left early. I saw him on a cart, but it was heat-related, so it wasn't anything that was an injury per se.
You good, baby? Oh, yeah. No, that's correct. It was because of one of the fights. Huh. It was because of one of the fights. All right, we'll chat. But no, it was because of one of the fights where for his and Alvin. It was one of the tight ends kind of fell into his knee. He was running, and tight end got blocked into Alvin's knee on that one. And then I didn't see Quincy's, but I did see him in the tent. And so it's unfortunate that's what he's dealing with. You know, it's always the case when you talk about being a little cooler out here, so maybe not stretching like I probably normally would if it was a little hotter, just because I don't think I have to get as loose. But, you know, hopefully it's not something that is nagging him going forward, because he is the guy that you're going to need. And, you know, he played really, really well last year.
After all the negative news about wide receiver Jordan Tyson being out with that hamstring issue, I was happy to retweet sideline reporter Jeff Nowak earlier. He had Kendra Miller, Devin Neal back at practice. Great to see those guys. Obviously a welcome addition back to this running back room.
Yeah, both of those guys were out there, and the reason that Aldrick didn't practice was because he could have if it was a game, but he was the one that took the bulk of the work in the last game, and so for him to be able to have off, I think, was good. But, you know, Kendra and Devin Neal, hey, look, every back, whether it was Chandler, whether it was Alvin, whether it was A-Chain, Devin Neal, as well as Kendra, every one of them popped a run. Now, whether it was 30 yards or 40 yards, I don't know. They would have had to outrun some guys. But to say that there was a +5, +10, I mean, a +10-yard run, every one of them had that, and they showed it. So, you know, like I said, offensively, I was pleased, you know, with some of the stuff that I saw. But it was the one group that they probably had the most fights. And the first period, the offense got after Dallas's first-team defense, and I think that's why those next 2 to 3 periods, you saw a lot more fight, a lot more spirited effort, and, you know, even taking a beyond the whistle a little bit as well.
Definitely from the reports I was seeing, Tyler Shuck, pretty good day, and he was feeding Chris Olave a lot too.
Yeah, Tyler did. They did pick him off a couple of times. I think it was one time maybe, but I know Rattler, one of them was a tip pass. But Chris Olave was, by my account, 9 for 9, and probably had over 100 yards easy.
Wow!
Every time he was targeted, it was a catch. Now, Chris Chris, the thing that Dallas does, and that's their offense, they go more vertical. And so Pickens had a big play. I think Mingo had a big crosser route on one of his catches. Their tight end had a big catch, but it was like a 14-yarder. Our DB or safety went for the interception. But Chris Olave, of his nine catches, three of them for at least 15 yards, and he was perfect. I mean, like I said, at one throw with he and Tyler, where it was just perfect down in the end zone, perfect throw. And the rest of them, whether it was a deep out, whether it was one time. Now I know Tyler did force it to him to the middle. Probably should have went to Juwan that had the 1-on-1. He didn't, and that's the one where I think they picked him off. But outside of that, man, Tyler Shuck and Chris Olave were on the money. They were cooking.
With Tyson down, who was taking reps mostly with the first teamers as that wide receiver too, Deuce?
Well, Vele didn't go today either. He had a veteran rest day, and so he will go again Thursday as far as practice was concerned. And so they really rotated, whether it was Austin, whether you talk about you also had 19 in there. Barrion was in there. Brown was in there. And then, you know, obviously Chris. And so from the receiver standpoint, that's basically what they did when they were talking about 11. You know, Bryce Lance had a good –
Oh, good to see him.
Good catch. Yeah, no, good catch as well. He had a nice catch on one route. I know they made a nice PBU against him on one route, but he had a nice route as well when he came up with the big catch. And, you know, who else? That was a heck of a throw. And I can't remember if it was Tyler or Rattler to Noah Fant.
Okay.
Where it was perfect in the end zone. I mean, and he was able to get both feet down. And so just it was good to see both of those guys. Now, there was one where I think Tyler was trying to hit Delp on a tight end delay, and he just hung on to the defender a little bit too long, where he's got to get out of there a little quicker. That was something that you did see as well. And so, you know, that's just stuff that you got to work on a little bit. And so, you know, you're pleased with it.
After his big day in the preseason opener for the Saints, did we see Kyle Wilson get any snaps as the second-team quarterback today?
He rotated in there.
Okay.
And so, you know, he rotated in there with the two, so he did get some snaps. It wasn't just with the threes because, you know, mainly the threes, they did get some snaps on the spot. And you kind of get lost as well with the numbers because of how many plays that they're trying to run or what they're trying to do from a play call while. I mean, because, like, as you know how it goes, both offenses are going at the same time, so you're looking one way to see – their offense run a play, and then you look over there to see our offense try to run a play, and then sometimes you see, I may not catch clean who the quarterbacks are, but I'm looking at the offensive linemen sometimes, and so that's who got the majority of the work, were the one and twos.
I saw that in some of the videos that the defense today was actually wearing offensive jerseys. Do you know what happened there and what was the case?
Yeah, they told them last minute that we needed different jerseys. Look, they talked today about them as far as the jerseys were concerned. And so originally you had everybody, both teams, you know, particularly offense and defense, you had the white and they had some of their blues on, but that was going to be hard to tell because their offense, I think, had their whites on as well. And so I think Chase Young had number 49 and number 10 was Granderson. So number 3 was Riley. I mean, until, like, I was confused all the way with defensive numbers, and just because you kind of see the player, but you don't know because they rotate so much that who's actually in, and that's why I couldn't tell who the corner was that was covering Mingo, and they had a mixture of numbers back there, so I don't know if it was first team, second team, but I do know one number that came up with a big interception. Who normally comes up with the interception for the Saints in these type of practices?
Jay Blackmon.
You're exactly right.
So he did it again.
Yep, came up in interception on Dak, and I mean, it was, you know, he's just in the right place. In the right place. Dak was a little high with the pass and came up with the big interception right there. And so Julian just right place, right time, just playing his coverage and comes up with the pick. But yeah, the defense, it was mass unit kind of with the numbers. So whoever's in charge of that as far as writing those numbers down for those guys, so they can kind of tell once they watch the film, good luck to them. Because, man, me doing it without, you know, obviously having the ability just to rewind it, I could not tell. I mean, but I do know Granderson made a heck of a play on one run stop, and Saints got a ton of pressure as well. I mean, they did get some pressure on Dak, and they got some pressure on Joe Milton, the backup quarterback. And so I think it was Broadnet for sure had one sack, and then you had one defensive lineman, another defensive lineman that had a sack from the interior. Now, Miller is here, but he did not practice today. He and Godshaw did not practice.
So Miller's still dealing, what was it, a shoulder issue right now for him?
Yeah, it's a shoulder.
So what were some of the other standouts you feel from the defense that you got to get an eye on from this one? Any, the pressure coming on the quarterback? Was Dak Prescott under any duress?
No, they definitely got pressure. They got sacks. I mean, and you had interior pressure. I mean, I thought Dallas did a good job against Chase Young now, and that's Tyler Guyton. Now, they gave him, presence with the tight end and different things of that nature. But I thought they did a good job against Chase, and so the Saints took advantage of that, whether it was inside with some of that one-on-one pressure or, like I said, Granderson and Broaden, both of those guys were able to get sacks and or pressure on that.
We got news today that the Saints worked out two wide receivers in Chase Claypool and Josh Reynolds. You kind of surprised, considering the depth they have right now, that they're at least looking at some guys? Or is it just, doing some due diligence to possibly keep the wide receiver room stacked while Tyson's down?
No, I think it's, this is what I know I need to do. We don't know who is kind of fighting through an injury, so to speak, as well. And so it's just like, all right, with as much as you're going to be doing, particularly with some of these practices, that's the one position where, one, I got to make sure that I have some guys available. And so, we'll see if they do sign one or two of those guys, if need be. Because, like I said, I think running, I don't know how – because he came back out at practice. He just wasn't in pads when he came back out here. So I suspect that he will be available on, Thursday, particularly when you go to practice. Tomorrow's a walkthrough, so he should be fine for that. But they do know, hey, if I need to sign one of these guys, I have them available and they're ready to go.
You mentioned, Deuce, that tomorrow being the walkthrough, is that kind of to sandwich a lighter day in between two of these joint aggressive practices?
No, 100%, that's what it is. I mean, because today was physically almost like a game. I mean, now you don't have the 100-degree weather kind of like we did when we went against Jacksonville, but they had a good it was a good amount of plays that they were able to run, and they kind of did it same way, whether you're backed up and moving the football. The only thing they didn't do were kind of the two-minute situations. They did not do the two-minute situations, but, you had everything from punt, you had everything from kick, punt return, you had the field goals, and then the only thing you didn't do, the kickoffs, but you had the field goals, and then, like I said, it was no one-on-ones as far as offensive linemen, D-linemen, anything like that. It was straight to team.
You mentioned, Deuce, before I let you, the field goal game. Any new status there? Because it kind of seems like Tanner Brown's got the lead over Charlie Smith right now. How did that end up shaking out today?
I could not tell you. My gotcha. View was actually blocked on that one. That was the one thing I could not – I saw it, but I could not tell you, yay, nay, or how that shook out.
Deuce, appreciate the time, man. Look forward to hearing more of you with Mike Hawes on the Saints Hour tonight. Thanks for stopping by Sports Talk, and enjoy the rest of that Cali weather.
All right, no problem. Appreciate it.
Deuce McAllister, Saints radio color analyst, joining us at Oxnard, California. The Saints wrapping up their joint workout with the Dallas Cowboys. And you heard Deuce, he wanted to have, the bell to introduce a boxing or wrestling match after this practice. Physical session, we'll see if that ends up being the case with the LA Rams on Thursday's workout. Tomorrow will be a walkthrough, so a lot less intensity will be going on. We'll still have plenty of sound coming to you from that workout, though, as the Black and Gold get ready for their second preseason game on Saturday, taking on the LA Rams. Right now, we're going to be taking a break. You can sound off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. It's 504-260-1870. We're breaking, coming back with more Sports Talk. Keep it locked on WWL.